to the political cesspool known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome back, everyone. Welcome back to the award-winning political cesspool radio program. Award-winning guests, we have been honored by the Memphis City Council for outstanding contributions to the community, and I have been named honorary city councilman. Of course, that's many years ago now, but it is for the work done on this radio program and by this radio program. These are two awards that hang here in our offices at AM 1380 WLRM Radio, where I am not at tonight. My co-hosts are. I'm not. Welcome back to the show anyway. James Edwards here with you, broadcasting from a hotel room in Dallas, Texas. If you caught the top of the first hour, you will know that I am on a little family vacation. My mother and daughter both celebrating birthdays today. My mother's birthday is today. My daughter's was 2 days ago. And so we're on a little family trip. My parents, my daughter, my wife are in Dallas tonight. And if my audio is not coming out as crisp and as clearly as you are accustomed to, the only reason is because I'm on a phone tonight and not at the studio, not broadcasting through our microphones and headsets that they provide for us for the radio. And for that, I apologize, but I am having a good time, and I'm glad that you are here with me Saturday evening, March 26th. In addition to our affiliate stations in Memphis, Tennessee, we are also broadcasting to the other AM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network and, of course, simulcasting online, thepoliticalcesspool.org and libertynewsradio.com if you want to catch our live internet stream or revisit our broadcast archives dating back to 2005. Hard to believe. The show's been on the air for 7 years now. 7 years goes by very fast when you're making the kind of news that we do. I want to thank Keith Alexander for co-hosting with me during the first hour, the hour that we are just coming out of. Very good hour. We talked about we made some great movie suggestions and recommendations. We also talked about movies you'd probably be better off without seeing. He wanted me to mention political cesspool fan, and he is a faithful fan, he sure is, Tom. Tom in Little Rock got in touch with Keith today before the show, Little Rock, Arkansas, and gave him a couple of suggestions for the previous hour's segments in which we went through the movies. And Keith wanted me to be sure to promise to say hello to Tom, and so we're doing that right now. If you missed the first hour, again, check it out in the broadcast archive. Still a lot more forthcoming tonight. Tonight during the third hour, I am going to be going through a rapid-fire segment of stories. There are so many stories we've got to get to tonight. I'm in Dallas right now. You know that. There was a member of the Dallas Cowboys football team that was banned from a mall here this week for refusing to pull up his pants. If that isn't fodder, if that isn't material custom-made for the Political Cesspool Radio program, I don't know what is. I'll give you one guess as to the guy's ethnicity, this member of the Dallas team. It's multiple choice. We'll see if you need it. And we're going to talk about that. Tiger Woods has a new girlfriend. Is this TMZ or is this TPC? I don't know. We're going to talk about the Weekly Standard. I was quoted in another big newspaper last week. We'll talk about that. Listen, stay tuned for the third hour. Bottom line, stay tuned for the third hour. I've got something for everyone during tonight's third hour. But first, Winston Smith is manning the studios. He's at home. He's at 1380. How are things going on Beale Street, Winston?
Well, Beale Street is Beale Street. And, you know, what most people don't know is that there are actually two Beale Streets here in Memphis. You know, there's the one for the tourists, and then there's the real Beale Street for those of us who actually live in the city. And they are two vastly different things. But, folks, if you...
If you're a tourist, you come to Beale Street to get drunk. If you go to the real Beale Street, you need a bulletproof vest.
Yes. So come as a tourist. Don't go to the real Beale Street. In fact, you know, if you're smart, you won't even set foot in downtown Memphis without being armed. I know I, James, even when I go to the zoo, I'm armed. But that's Memphis, you know. That's Memphis. James, you're broadcasting from Dallas. It reminds me that from what places have I broadcast on the cesspool from? I've broadcast from China. I've broadcast from Florida, from Arkansas, from Virginia, from San Diego. We get around, don't we?
Hey, we get around, and don't forget, we did it from that Submarine One episode there in the river next to Charlotte when the American Renaissance was under attack. We had to, you know, kind of cruise in there subvertly and listen, I tell you, you never know what you're going to get on the cesspool. But this, again, you got to give credit to Liberty News Radio. As I said, since I'm not in studio tonight, my audio clarity might not be crystal, but the fact that I'm able to broadcast a three-hour syndicated radio program from a hotel room, hey, you got to give credit to the producers and the engineers out there in Utah at Liberty News Radio for making all this possible. We need to do it from the studio, but when we can't, they make it possible. You know, I could do it, you know. Yeah, listen, we can do it from the spaceship if we want to. We'll go to Portland, Oregon, and borrow Spaceship One from Paul Allen. You know, we can do it from space. That's the only thing we haven't done, and that's forthcoming. I guarantee you, folks, just wait.
James, I remember when Senator Mitch McConnell in South Carolina told us that the goal is to put the CSS Hunley back into the water, and how cool would that be to do a show from below decks on the CSS Hunley?
Hey, that's another one. That's another. We'll do that. Probably be too ambitious to work that in for this year's Confederate History Month, but for 2012, listen, that's going to be a goal of mine. So stay tuned for that, folks. And listen, that was a perfect cue, Winston. I want to remind everyone that Confederate History Month starts. It's official. This isn't something we make up and celebrate here just on the show. Confederate History Month really does exist in the South. Some states actually still celebrate it, thank God. Confederate History Month, April 1st. It begins, Confederate History Month 2011. Don't forget, we will be Confederate heavy on the show. We'll be dedicating an hour of each program during the month of April to all things Southern. We'll be displaying our Southern pride on the website with many great guest articles and blog postings pertaining to the Confederacy and Southern tradition and culture during Confederate History Month there at thepoliticalcesspool.org. We will probably be, once again, the only mainstream AM/FM radio show in the country that's celebrating Confederate History Month loudly and proudly, but that's just another reason why we are your favorite talk radio show. That's why you're tuned in, is because we are different than a lot of the Rush Limbaugh wannabes. We give you some red meat, some fresh meat, some raw meat, any way you like your meat. I actually had, I had a hamburger the other night. I don't know how they do it in Houston. When you order a hamburger medium, apparently that's different than the way Memphis does it. It looks like they kind of just put a raw slab over and, you know, let the flames kiss it, and that was it. But anyway, whatever kind of meat you want, we got your cut here in the cesspool, and we're going to give you some Confederate meat coming up pretty soon, Winston. I know that means a lot to you as well.
Oh, yes.
I don't know
does.
If anything
we,
I said just
made
sense,
have a special
but
guest.
I'm excited about it, I guess.
Oh, yes, we're going to have a special guest.
Hang on. They're playing our song. We're going to talk about our guest when we come back. We got our guest. He's coming up right after this.
Don't go away. There's more Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages. When the truth is found to be... Welcome back. To get on the Political Cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
Back to the show, everyone. James Edwards broadcasting remotely tonight from Dallas, Texas. Winston Smith just filled in the chair vacated by Keith Alexander. Winston co-hosting with me from Memphis during this, our second hour. If you go to our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org, you will find there at the very top of our blog a promotional announcement about tonight's show. I want to remind you that if you enjoyed Keith Alexander's commentary during the first hour, during which he made his recommendation of favorite movies and least favorite movies, we want to hear what your favorite movies are and what your least favorite movies are. And to respond to this thread, just go to our website, click on that promotional piece for tonight's show, leave your comments in the comment box there on the blog. We look forward to reading your thoughts. Also there, you will find a little introductory paragraph introducing you to tonight's guest. And with that being said, I'm going to turn it over to Winston Smith, who is all prepared and boned up to introduce this gentleman to you and his great work. Winston, over to you.
Thank you very much, James. Folks, it is my pleasure to welcome to the show Nathaniel Strickland. That name may sound familiar to you. About 4.5 years ago, I did a series called the Young Patriots series, in which I found some of the up and coming members of the white nationalist movement and of the Save the Western Civilization movement. Nathaniel was on the show, and he was a great guest then, and I expect he will be a great guest tonight as well, because he has a website up that I encourage you to visit. It is called Faith and Heritage. You can access it very simply at www.faithandheritage.com. That's all one word, faithandheritage.com. It is a superbly done website. It is filled with information, and it is a different sort of website, and we're going to talk about that as soon as I welcome Nathaniel Strickland to the political cesspool. Nathaniel, are you there?
I am. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, this is going to be tough. I can hardly hear you. Maybe the engineer could do something here to pump up the volume. Can you hear me all right, Nathaniel?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can just barely hear you. I'm going to go ahead and launch right into the questions and work something out as we go along. All right, Faith and Heritage, the website. What prompted you to establish the Faith and Heritage website?
Well, I created Faith and Heritage to create to fill what I saw as a glaring vacuum. The modern Christian church has set up this kind of false dichotomy between Marxist egalitarianism on the one hand and racial supremacy on the other, and have kind of completely excluded from the discussion the position that our forefathers took, the traditional Christian position of ethno-nationalism. Can you hear me?
Well, Nathaniel, I got dropped there for a moment, so I didn't get to hear all of your answer. I heard you say that you established the Faith and Heritage website in order to fill a vacuum that was existing, and it was a vacuum that omitted let's call it the original intent of the founding fathers as their vision for this country. Is that correct?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
I was trying to recap what I heard from your answer to the first question. I got dropped somewhere in between there. I'm going to take it on faith that the audience heard your answer, and I'm just going to go on with the remainder of my questions. The Faith and Heritage website is very faith-heavy. Make no bones about that. Now, do you welcome all faiths to partake in your website? Or are you? Do you focus mainly on the faith of the fathers?
No, we just the base of the site is traditional Christianity.
Okay,
we cover everything from politics and current events to family issues, race, culture, and history, recipes, and movie reviews. But the kind of underlying theme to the site is that we address all these points from a traditional Christian pro-European perspective. All our authors are Christians, and we seek to address all the topics that we do address from this traditional Christian perspective.
So you see Christianity as the all-encompassing the all-encompassing factor for everything else that you do.
That's correct.
It colors and contains everything.
Yes.
Okay. Do you see a racial element in religion? Some religions are very tightly linked to specific races. For example, Catholicism is heavily linked to the Hispanic races, and Islam is heavily linked to the Middle Eastern and Negro races. Do you see a racial element in religion?
Yes and no. While Christianity is a universal religion and is open to anyone regardless of race, the white race has always had a special relationship with Christianity. In Acts 16:6-10, we see the beginning of this relationship. The Holy Spirit comes to the Apostle Paul and specifically directs him to go west into Europe instead of east into Asia as he had originally intended. Mm-hmm. I think this is a fulfillment of the blessings that were given to Japheth in Genesis 9:27, and the European race being the descendants of Japheth.
Mm. It has been noted by some historians that the white race is the only race that accepted Christianity on its own merits. Other races didn't really accept it, but rather were conquered into accepting Christianity. And the result is we see that they don't really hold to Christianity at all. However, the white race, it does seem to be the white man's religion, and I'm proud to claim it, Christianity as our religion, because, as I said, we accepted it on its own merits and not because we were forced into it. What do you think of that?
Well, like I said, it certainly has a special relationship to the European race that I don't think any other race has. Christianity has molded the development of the West and the European race in a way that is completely unique. And as you said, you can find Christianity in almost every corner of the globe now, but it is due to the work of European missionaries and mission works and our military conquest that is there now. It's not due to kind of an organic spread.
Mm-hmm. Nathaniel, this past week I read an article that said that the mestizos accounted for nearly 50% of the non-white population increase that was seen in the year 2010 census. Is there a religious or a spiritual reason for that dramatic demographic shift occurring right before our very eyes?
Nathaniel, before you answer that question, I want you to ponder that question during the course of this next commercial break, because we've got to take one. Ladies and gentlemen, we are joined now by our featured guest for the evening, Nathaniel Strickland of faithandheritage.com. Check it out. We will continue with this special interview right after this.
To get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. Big girls
don't cry. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Political Cesspool radio program. James Edwards here with you, hosting tonight from afar. Long way from Memphis, Tennessee, over in Dallas, Texas. Of course, not as far away as China is, where Winston has broadcasted a show remotely from before. But nevertheless, here I am, Winston there in Memphis. And our featured guest tonight, of course, Nathaniel Strickland of faithandheritage.com. With me being out of town tonight, I'm leaning a little more heavily on my co-host than I typically like to do, but they do such a great job, I feel very comfortable in doing so. Winston has done an excellent job preparing for tonight's featured guest, and I'm going to turn the reins of this interview back over to him. Winston, you had a great question online for Nathaniel before that last commercial break. Could you repeat it, please?
Yeah, I could, but you know, Nathaniel, I asked your question before, and I have a list here, and if you don't mind, I would like to get back to the question that I asked you before, because I have a specific order for these questions. Is that all right with you?
That's fine with me.
Okay, here's the next question. Does the intrinsic Christianity of America's founding have implications for the ethnicity of America's population as envisioned by the founders? And by that, I mean, you know, the founders had a vision, and they envisioned a country for themselves and their posterity. And when they looked through the upcoming years, what do you think they saw as their posterity?
Well, yes. Proverbs 13:22 specifically says that a good man, a godly man, leaves a good inheritance for his children and for his children's children. And we should not see this as simply monetary. We should see this this inheritance as also territorial and cultural, that we should seek to leave for our great-grandchildren a good nation, a godly culture, a great heritage and great traditions for them. And this is what the Founding Fathers tried to set up in America. They want America to be a European country populated by whites. As you said, they specifically laid out that the U.S. Constitution, the government of the United States, was for themselves and their posterity. And this should be seen as their blood posterity, their children. Immigration laws were specifically set up to limit immigration into the United States to only free white persons. This was the original Immigration Act back in the 1790s. And then again, in 1924, which was the next big Immigration Act, the Johnson-Reed Act, also known as the National Origins Act, was specifically created to try to preserve the European character of America. The Founding Fathers had no illusions about the propositional nature of nations. They did not believe that nations were propositional. They believed that nations were blood and soil, and they wanted the blood and soil of America to be European.
To my thinking, Nathaniel, it's a foolish thing for any nation to be what has become popularly known as a proposition nation. And the reason for that is because, you know, propositions are going to change depending upon who's in power. However, there is one thing, as far as life on this earth is concerned, that does not change, and that is your blood. That is your kin. That does not change. And I think that was what guided the founders in coming up with their vision for the population of this country. They saw themselves and their posterity as white people, as you said. And I just don't think that visions themselves, their posterity, they imagined Barack Hussein Obama. What do you think?
Certainly not. And certainly not in a leadership position.
Mm-hmm. In fact, you know, the word king comes from the word kin. Your kin is your blood. So if you're going to have a ruler over you, the idea is that your king should be your kin, and that is someone of your blood. And that just does not include Barack Hussein Obama. I'm not going to apologize for that. There's no reason to apologize for the truth.
Indeed.
All right, next question.
In the Old Testament law, the Israelites were specifically commanded to raise up above them magistrates that were from their brethren. And so I don't think Barack Obama is a biblical candidate to rule a white nation.
Mm. And I think that goes back to the fifth commandment of honoring our fathers and our mothers, Nathaniel. That commandment was given to us, and it had a promise with it, that as long as we honor our fathers and our mothers, then our days will be long upon the land which the Lord our God gave us. And now we see our land being taken away from us, and I firmly believe it's because we have not honored our fathers and our mothers, specifically our founding fathers, who gave us this country for themselves and their posterity, that being us, their ideological and, more importantly, their genetic posterity.
Indeed. We have played the part of Esau and sold our birthrights for multicultural soup.
All right, next question is the one that I asked before we went to the break. this past week, I read an article that said mestizos accounted for nearly 50% of the non-white population increase seen in the year 2010 census. Do you see a religious or a spiritual reason for this dramatic demographic shift occurring right before our eyes?
Oh, yes. The article that you refer to is making reference to the results of the 2010 U.S. Census. And these are some of the preliminary results. And the results show that 90% of the population growth in the U.S. from 2000 to 2010 were from non-white groups. The Hispanic portion of this population, the United States population, hit 50 million. That means one in every six adults and one in every four children is now Hispanic in the United States. And you ask if you think this has a spiritual or religious reason. I think it definitely does. Going back to the point we made discussing the last question is that we have turned our backs on God, and we have turned our backs on the way God has designed nations to function. We are in rebellion against God's natural order. And the Bible makes it very clear that a nation being flooded with foreigners is actually a punishment on that nation. If you look at Ezekiel 7:21, Lamentations 5:2, Isaiah 1:7, they specifically mention that foreigners flooding into a nation are a punishment for that nation's disobedience to God's command and God's natural order. And so far from viewing this as a positive thing, or as I've even heard some Christians tout as a ministry opportunity, we should view this as a judgment, and we should be on our faces before God asking, repenting and asking for him to save us from this calamity that's being brought down upon us.
And carrying that further, Nathaniel, instead of being in a state of woe over God judging us this way, we ought to be happy about it, because that means he is still concerned with us. His eye is still on us, and he still wants us back into his fold. He still wants us as his people.
Indeed, and we need to repent of the way we have been squandering our birthright and our inheritance, and turn back our hearts back to God.
Nathaniel, many white haters, such as Reuben Navarette Jr. and Tim Wise, say that the reaction white Americans have toward the demographic shift is born of fear and xenophobia and an unrealistic nostalgia for a quote-unquote Mayberry America that never really existed. They say that our best response would be celebrate and embrace this change as some kind of fulfillment of America's promise. Your response?
Well, I think that their statements have the false assumption that fear is bad. There are some things we should be very afraid of, and white Americans are being dispossessed. If something doesn't change soon, their children will live in a non-white America, third world America, and this is a prospect that should terrify any white American. We look at places like Haiti, Rhodesia, South Africa, Detroit, Los Angeles. We should take these places as examples of what happens when non-whites inherit white governments, white nations, and the results are never positive. They're never positive for the white people who used to inhabit them. Diversity is not strength. Diversity plus proximity equals warfare. Right now, we're in a low-intensity culture war, but on the fringes where white and non-white meet, our people are being murdered and raped, and whites are running out of places they can run to and hide. We should expect this the physical aspect of this warfare to increase.
Nathaniel Winston, sorry to interrupt. Hang on right there, gentlemen. We're going to be back to continue this interview and conclude this interview right after this.
Guys, we'll be back right after these messages.
We'll return. We'll return.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
I am the host, all right, James Edwards, but I'm certainly not carrying the load this hour. That goes to, of course, Winston Smith, a member of the political cesspool all-star stable of talent, my loyal and trusted co-host, manning the studio there in Memphis as he conducts this interview that he has prepared so diligently for with Nathaniel Strickland of faithandheritage.com. Do want to remind the listening audience that in our third and final hours, I will be exclusively bringing to you a number of news stories that we have been commenting on at our website over the course of the last couple of weeks. So we're going to have a lot of variety coming up in the third hour. But first, one more segment with our featured guest of the evening. And with that being said, Winston, I'll turn it back over to you and Nathaniel Strickland.
Thank you, James. Before we get started, again, Nathaniel, I'd like to remind folks that they can go to your website, Faith and Heritage, by going to www.faithandheritage.com. One word, faithandheritage.com. It's a superb website, and it's well worth your time. All right, let's get back to it. Nathaniel, you're about halfway through your answer to the question about the notion that white Americans have it all wrong, that we should embrace this demographic shift in which we see ourselves becoming a minority within our own country, within this generation. So continue on with your answer, please.
Oh, yes. Multiracial empires never work. They always either destroy themselves from the inside and fall apart, or they simply descend into barbarism as the original stock that founded the empire die out. You can't change human nature. There is no way to create this Marxist utopian, multicultural, multiracial utopia. It just doesn't work. Our current situation will end in one of three ways. Either our people are wiped out, America is partitioned up amongst different ethnic groups, or open ethnic warfare. And I don't view any of those three as positive outcomes. But one of those three will be the outcomes if we don't reverse the current situation. And these are legitimate fears that white Americans have, and simply labeling them as xenophobic and poo-pooing them is not a legitimate reaction to them.
Nathaniel, the question that I have, whenever I hear people say that that white people have no good reason to be upset about what's happening, the question that I throw back at them is this: well, why are they so happy about it? Why are they so happy that they are increasing in population? It seems like if they have the right to be happy about it because they have an agenda, then we have the right to defend against it. What do you think of that?
I agree. It's a double standard to say that it's a good thing for non-whites to increase and also a good thing for whites to decrease. It just doesn't make sense. It's not logical.
Nathaniel, we just celebrated St. Patrick's Day not so long ago, and soon we're going to be celebrating Easter. And more than ever before this year, I saw numerous articles about the so-called pagan of St. Patrick's Day. Indeed, it seems that in recent years, I've seen more and more articles about the alleged pagan origins of many Christian holidays and holy days. Why are we seeing these kinds of articles, and should Christians be ashamed, embarrassed, or otherwise stymied by these revelations that some of our holy days did indeed have pagan origins?
No, I don't think this should be a cause for alarm at all. I'm going to, as part of my answer, I'm going to read an excerpt from one of the articles that was recently posted by David on the Faith and Heritage website. The title of the article is "The Proper Place the Proper Place of Pagan Mythology and European Identity." To begin the quote, "Christian Europeans have a long and proud history of appropriating the myths, symbols, holidays, and traditions for Christian usage. Christians have maintained this practice as part of the mandate to take dominion over the earth. By appropriating the best elements of our pre-Christian past,
Christians in Europe were able to create a vibrant culture that wed Christian orthodoxy with the good taste of what came before. It is important to understand that this did not mean mixing pagan and Christian elements together in worship. Pagan deities were simply honored as heroes of the past, heroes of ages long past who are not divine and could not deliver anyone from sin, death, or the devil. This did not mean that our Christian this does not mean to our Christian forefathers that pagan symbols or traditions could not be cleverly redesigned to convey a Christian meaning. End quote. A lot of our symbols and holidays were indeed pagan in their origin, but they were European in the origin as well. And I think that this excerpt that I read superbly demonstrates the wisdom of our European ancestors. Instead of, when they became Christians, instead of just tossing out their entire heritage, they simply appropriated the best of their heritage and gave them Christian meanings. And I think this is an excellent way to kind of keep our heritage intact while still being, as I'll still practicing Christianity. And I think this is excellent. I don't think there's anything that in this that Christians should be ashamed or embarrassed about.
It reminds me of a quote from G.K. Chesterton. I don't think I have it memorized verbatim, but it goes something like this. Chesterton said he was happy to see a return of pagan elements in modern literature because it could signal a return to Christianity. What the new pagans forget when they try to become like the old pagans is that the last thing the old pagans did was to get christened.
Indeed. We have a very vibrant heritage, and simply trying to label our entire heritage as evil because our ancestors worship false gods, I think, is a very bad approach. We should try to redeem the best elements of our heritage and continue them on under our Christian tradition.
Of course, the criticism of the pagan origins of some Christian holidays, that criticism extends only to Christianity. We never read about some of the satanic origins of, say, Judaism, or some of the bizarre origins of some of the strictures of Islam. It's only Christianity that is subjected to this kind of critique.
Indeed, because Christianity is the foundation, is one of the most important foundations of the West, and our enemies know that if they can destroy Christianity, then the West will soon follow.
In the remaining time that we have, Nathaniel, I'd like to go through the About page of faithandheritage.com. Excuse me. And I'll play devil's advocate to some of the points there. And most of my arguments are going to focus on a certain element. So let's see what you have to say about this. Go to the website here, www.faithandheritage.com. First paragraph. We affirm that all men of every race, ethnicity, and tribe are created in the image of God. However, this common humanity does not mean that all groups are equal in every respect. Just as two brothers can share a common family but be blessed by providence with vastly differing talent and abilities. We affirm that many of these differences have genetic components and thank God about the diversity of mankind. Now, playing devil's advocate, here you go, Nathaniel, saying that race actually exists and that a lot of things that the races exhibit are genetic. Does that include intelligence?
Certainly. You'll often find that the people who argue that race is not genetic and that intelligence has no genetic components will often accuse the person who's saying that intelligence is genetic of trying to dehumanize the group of people whom they're saying are less intelligent. Well, I don't believe that intelligence is the measure of humanity. I believe that the image of God is the measure of humanity. And so thus, a person can be smart or a person can be stupid and still be human. And so I think that when people start trying to say that you can't say intelligence is genetic because you're dehumanizing the other person, that their measure of humanity is not Christian, but Marxist. And the Marxist egalitarianism that we must all be equal or we aren't truly human. And I don't think that's a Christian view at all.
The third paragraph of this page is, we affirm that the multinational, multiracial makeup of Christ's church, we affirm the multinational, multiracial makeup of Christ's church. We further affirm that nations and races are themselves individual expressions of providence, separated and cultivated by God to check the spread of evil and add to his glory, to be preserved kind after kind in this world and eternally in the world to come. We affirm that all attempts to amalgamate humans into one mixed mass are an open rebellion against God's law and his sovereignly created boundaries. Now, what this seems to be saying is that you appreciate some kind of segregation within Christ's church. Are you a segregationist, Nathaniel?
There's a third hour.
Well, Winston, you'll have to hang on to answer that question. Stay tuned, everybody. We're coming up on a commercial break. Third hour forthcoming.